Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner. And with me tonight is Anthony and Tony and Nelly. You want to say hi, Nelly?
Hello.
You're not usually on with us. Anthony, you want to say hi?
Yeah, hey, everyone.
And Tony.
It's going to be a good show.
Tony's there anyway. So, what?
How dare you do this
Do you want to talk to the face of the show? If the face looked like something that, you know, was from creepy outer space or something. So
the face looks like a racer head.
A perfect face for a paranormal show.
Oh, wow.
Perfect face for a David Lynch movie.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, folks. So here what we got tonight. We got something really weird to talk about. This show, we talk about werewolves and vampires and all that kind of stuff, but this goes way back to vampires. Everybody knows what that is, right? It goes way, way back. And so we're going to talk about that tonight. So before we get started, let me get the prelims out of the way. We have a few changes that we've done. We have Paranormal Roundtable group still on Facebook. Please go join. But now we have a new group. What is it called, Nelly?
Paranormal Big Top.
Paranormal Big Top. Because we no longer have Paranormal Lounge. That has become, what is it?
Is that Ry Voss's group now?
Yes. Supernatural Town Hall Sessions.
Okay. Oh, is that what it is?
It's correcting us. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So Supernatural Town Hall Sessions. Okay. So that's what
that is. That's the name of the group, not his show, though.
His show is Codega's.
Yeah.
Yeah, Codex Paranormal Lounge became Supernatural Town Hall Sessions.
Yeah. You tell him, Nelly. Someone needs to keep him in line because he's always on to us.
Yeah, there you go. He's always he's bugging. So here's what we got going on, man. You know, tonight, before we get started, I want to get this out of the way. I know some people have complained, and they're like, I could do without that first 5 minutes. And I'm like, wow. Well,
then do so silently.
Then wanting to timestamp it.
Because, you don't have to announce that. Just skip ahead.
Yeah. And so sometimes we'll stretch it out a little bit on purpose, folks. I just want to let you know that, okay? Because we know how much time it's going to take to do the stories. And so we might stretch it out a little bit. But tonight we got a lot to talk about. So we're going to skim through it real quick. Paranormal Soundtable. That's our music label that Nelly has written the songs. It's all her idea, her whatever. I contributed a little to some of the ideas, but like the music and stuff, we've kind of came together and decided how we want to do the music. But she writes all the lyrics, all her.
Yeah, it's pretty much Nelly's creative project.
Nelly's creative project.
And it's on iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, and YouTube.
Yep, Paranormal Soundtable. I will say this. Nelly told me that I need to take credit for it, and I will. I helped write a couple of the lyrics on, like, two of the songs. That was it. I think that's all I had. She's like, you need to be, you know, you're being too modest. I'm like, yeah, let's quit BSing here. I'm not really the one in charge of that. So Paranormal Soundtable, something I'm very proud of, though. I'm very proud of my wife. She's a good artist, too. She just has a lot of talent. So that's that. We got that. And then we have the Patreon. Patreon, to me, is the best way to support the show. You get a $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 tier. And each one gives you a little more. If you get the top tier, you get like four books altogether. Two of them are my autograph books. The tier right below that is you get three books. One of them is one of my autograph books, and of course you get a shirt and a whatever. And the $30 tier is basically you get two autograph books from different authors, not me. $20, it's one book, and then $10, it's one book. But on the $20 tier, you get a shirt or a hoodie, and then just like in the 30, 40, and 50. So there's that. We get that out of the way. That's a lot to say, a lot to talk about. Also, we want to remind you, we do have a way that if you want to donate and help the show, we have a PayPal link that we'll put in the show, and then you could do a super chat. Also, go to Paranormal Roundtable live stream, which comes on every Friday. We have a guest every Friday, and that is on at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, somewhere between 8:30 and 9. We always try to say 8:30, but it doesn't work out. So we try to get there between 8:30 and 9. You'll get the notification if you sign up for the notification. So you want to do that. And then Saturday we do the Alien Agenda roundtable that's been going on for about 2 months almost. And it's been a big hit and it's really starting to catch on. We don't have as big a crowd that comes in, you know, it's about 300-400 people, but, it's still, you know, we get some views on it and then people that have watched it have taken the time to go and check it out and not just dismiss it because it's not werewolves and, vampires and Dogman and Bigfoot, you know. The people that have watched it said they really like it a lot. So and it's always two or three guests on there. And then on Sunday, I just retell people's stories. It's just me, Anthony, and Tony doing the round table. And of course we have Tuesdays, which is what this is. And I have Thursdays, with Blondes and Booze at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. They always have a guest. The ladies do a really good job. Brandy and Krista. So, what we're going to talk about today, if in case you didn't know, we do a live stream and it was episode 218 on the live stream. And that is called The Werewolf Confessions. We named it that. It was impromptu werewolf stories. And it was because the guy who gave me the information, his name was Gerald. He said to go ahead and do it. He wanted to do it. And he had a sense of urgency that I was not really sure why, and he didn't really give me a reason, and I didn't pry into it, and I just said, okay, I'll do it, you know, because I was going to wait until that following Sunday. So that was last month. That was the Monday before yesterday. As of this recording, this is Monday, but like Tuesday in your book, because you're listening to it on Tuesday. So it would have been a little over a week ago. So go back and check that out. That show was interesting, too, because afterwards we did a Q&A, and then we just ended up having Chris Garitano come on. He was in the chat, and then he jumped on, and we started talking to him. And then Paul Sinclair came on. And then after a little while, Chris jumped off and because he's doing a big project, a big movie project. And then me and Paul Sinclair were on there for a while, and Paul told some werewolf stories from England. So it was really cool. It was a really cool show. Go check it out. It was one of our best, I think, but I have to give credit to Gerald. And today we're going to talk about Joel. Now, I did not realize when he told me that he goes, you know, he had a friend that had been, as of when I was talking about it at that point, I did not know that Joel was the name of his. If you go back and listen, you know what I'm talking about. When Gerald and his buddy Joel got in trouble with this cult, I guess you want to call it a demonic cult, they were doing something they shouldn't have been doing. They were selling narcotics into this cult, and they ended up getting sideways because Gerald did not exercise discretion and did something he shouldn't have done. And then they got found, you know, they found out about some things they shouldn't have found out about. So these people went and got him. And Gerald was actually supposed to execute this man, Joel. And so when I didn't realize, though, that that was his aunt's boyfriend, that this was the guy that he, you know, that was his name. He didn't, you know, when he was telling me the story, he didn't give me his name because he didn't know what Joel wanted to go by or whatever. So he just said, you know, my aunt's boyfriend. And I thought his aunt's boyfriend would be like 20 years older than him or something like that. But his aunt's only like 7 years older than him. And Joel's a couple, like 2.5 years younger than his aunt. So he's only a few years older than Gerald. But this man now is like over 60. So he has no reason to lie to me. And I really believe what this man told me. I really do. I think that these guys were being honest. I don't think this is some kind of, you know, jerking me around or nothing. And Gerald, at least according to what Joel told me over the last few days, and of course, Nelly, Anthony, Tony know that I've been talking to this man for about 4 or 5 hours. Finally got it, most of it out, you know, what he needed to say. And it took place over an hour and a half blocks over the last few days, up until Sunday, through all the chaos and turmoil that we've had going on. We've had a lot going on with work and everything else. I managed to get this done. And it was like, oh my gosh. Weird thing too, I was watching Tex's front porch and he had Brandy on and they had a guest. And I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. I think it was Kristen or something like that. And she was talking about some stuff and it was last night's show on Monday. which would be as of this telling right here. But they were talking about hell and some different, you know, like things that, you know, and all of a sudden, like, people's comments weren't going through, and they were having like technical issues and stuff. So when I was talking to Joel, it was even worse than it was when I talked to Gerald, because there was a few weird things that when me and Gerald were talking, like, you know, I was like, I thought I heard a voice, and it wasn't Gerald. And Gerald goes, yeah, that's, you're going to hear that. And he said, those are spirits. That's what he told me. He was very matter of fact about it. These guys are now hardcore born again Christians. And one of the things that Joel said, the same thing, he said that there's like always going to be this presence around. So he would be talking, and then he wouldn't hear me. And then at times I wouldn't hear him, and we'd have to like catch up. And it was very frustrating. So it was like somebody was trying to stop us from communicating, or something was trying to stop us, but we got it done. And my voice is on the verge of going out, so I'm doing my best I can to try to say what I got to say. But I'll say this, and this is most important. Let me adjust the mic. Sorry about that. I want you people to understand what I'm telling you. This is serious, what I'm going to tell you. For those of you, I'm not going to give the backstory. Just go listen to the show. I'm not trying to plug it. It's not going to like do much for you to go back and listen to it for us, but I think it's important if you go back and listen to episode 218 of the live stream, The Werewolf Confessions. Now, that's not 218 of the regular one-hour show. That's the live stream, and they're numbered, you know, whatever. So that show was 5 hours.
Yeah.
That show was 5 hours. Go back and check it out. I'm not going to give the backstory of what's going on, of how Joel and his friend, Gerald, of how they got in trouble with these people and whatever. I will just say, like I just said, they were selling narcotics, and it was a large amount of LSD, and they got a hold of like other types of hallucinogens, because that's what these people wanted. So they made a connection. One of the people that was supplying them ended up becoming the new connection when these two went into working with this cult. And so that person got talked to by them, and it was crazy because like the first like month or so, everything was fine. And then that person displeased the council, as they called it. Each of these places where they go to do their business is called the temple. And so it was like a revolving door of dealers at one point. He said that guy disappeared, and then another guy took his place. And then he goes, dude, it would have been like, you know, it was crazy. And so they tried to initiate one of them that they were connected to, this guy Carlos, who was a big-time dealer, into the cult, because he got found out by them, and or what they got found out. And they were like, well, we can give you a choice. So he said, okay. So he joined, but he had a problem. He liked to do drugs himself, and that was not acceptable because the drug that he liked to do was cocaine. And so they were like, nope, you know, that's you can't do that. And so when I was talking to Joel, this was interesting. I told him, and I'm just going to start right here. This was toward the beginning of his initiation when he became what he said was a vampire. He practiced vampirism. He drank blood, and he began to need it. Now, it wasn't like you would think. It's not like Twilight. It's not like, you know, a Nosferatu vampire-looking guy or whatever. Those do exist, according to him, and we're going to get into that too. Those do exist. According to him, there is a creature.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're an ancient creature, which I suspected came from within the earth, and I was right about that. I asked him about that. Some things, though, that I didn't know, I had no clue about, and he just told me about it, and I learned a lot. They live a long, long time, and yeah, they're not immortal, but they live a long, long time. this guy that Carlos that took over their spot as the dealer or whatever, there was like the third guy, I guess, that they had dealt with. He was dealing other things too, and they told him, okay, that's fine. Because they wanted money too, and anything, they'll do anything for money, but they don't want to be found out. But they have a lot of people in high places that keep them from getting in any real trouble. And so we'll get into that too. But this guy, Carlos, what happened was he had a taste for this drug. And so they have this thing that attaches to their body. They call it the other. And we discussed that on episode 218 of the live stream. The other comes in and it embeds itself into your spine. And then it looks through your eyes, looks through your body. And it uses it, and you develop a symbiotic relationship, much like Venom. And I was actually told that by these guys, because, you know, Gerald had said something about that. And of course, you know, Joel said, look, it's my grandson talked to me about Venom, you know, and he goes, and so I knew what it was. He goes, and when I really sat back and I watched that movie, the one with Tom Hardy, he goes, I realized that that's very much like what that is. And he said, I never read the comic books or anything like that. And he remembers seeing it on Spider-Man too, the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
And saying that yeah, I kind of was like, whoa, that's weird. You know, and he goes, so I watched that. And he goes, and I'm not into comics, but I watched that because of the Venom guy, you know. And he's like, that's very much how it is. But he said that, you know, it's a weird thing because this thing will unattach itself and then reattach itself. And if you do something that is addictive and then you try to stop, it's like either you can't stop, or it'll go and it'll unattach and go find somebody to latch onto. Now, I asked him about that, and I said, did those people become werewolves or vampires? He goes, no, but it can create a psychosis in them that makes them think they are. So that was interesting. He says, some of these people that are like, I'm a vampire, a werewolf, he's like, they're actually being possessed by one of the others that makes them think that.
So if you have one of these things on you and you begin a drug habit, which you then stopped, and it'll unattach itself and go find someone.
It will find someone else if you're powerful enough to stop, which happened to Gerald, because Gerald was a heavy drinker. And he would also do drugs, as we talked about on that last episode. And what he would do is he would make an agreement with the other that because they were not supposed to do that. And you become part of like a hive mind, but it's kind of like a camera. You know, it's weird. He goes, you can turn it off and on by bribing the other. Yeah, it's like supplication. So you'll say, hey, you know, let's go eat pancakes. We're not supposed to eat pancakes. And the other's like, okay, well, I'll just tune out, you know, and then.
Yeah, because they want worldly pleasures.
Pleasures, yeah. But they're supposed to resist. And he said that Gerald's, him being a werewolf, he said that his was like high strung. And it was a younger entity. The older entities tend to be attached to a werewolf so that they could control it better. But he said, for some reason, Gerald's ended up getting a younger entity. And what I mean by younger is like, you know, one that's 1,000 years old, you know? Yeah. But he said some of these vampires that tend to live longer than the werewolves, he said that they could be up to 2,000-3,000 years old, these entities. And that he knew some of the warlocks that had some that they claimed were like up to upwards of 8 to 10,000 years old. And at the very, very top, he said there were some that were like ancient beyond, like you couldn't even measure. We don't even know. But he said it just goes on up the chain. One of the things that he talked about too, like he said that, you know, Gerald had a drinking habit. It had unattached itself a couple times. It went on like a rampage, and like they had to trap it in the temple and put it back on him, and Gerald got lashed for it. Gerald didn't tell me that. So, you know, when I messaged him about it, and Gerald just says, oh, yeah, yeah. And he says, ask Joe, he'll tell you, whatever.
But it always comes back to you when it unattaches?
Not always. Not always. And if you lose it, that's a death sentence for you. I mean, you're done. Wow. You're done. Because if they you have no more powers, and then they'll catch you, and they'll just destroy you. And one of the things they do, they literally will eat you alive. So it's not something that it's not a fun thing at all. And he asked me this question, and he says, does this bother you to talk? Are you worried about talking about it? And I said, no. And he asked me why. And I said, well, I talked to Gerald, and Gerald told me that if you're anointed in Christ, if you believe in the power of Christ, and according to Gerald, though, it's not just that. I mean, there are actually good people that they just don't mess with them because it makes them sick if they try to mess with people. And and Joel reiterated this sentiment that there are people who are destined to become Christian too. And that God, it's like you try to mess with them and they just, it can't, it doesn't happen.
So even if they're not there yet.
They're not there yet. They will be. Yeah. He goes, you can see them because they have like a glow. And he goes, and you can't mess with them. And he said that they don't really tell you that in the initiations, that you can actually drop out and become saved. But one of the things he also talked about, he said, dude, there were people that they wouldn't mess with, just particular powerful people. Like there was another coven that was adjacent to them in another town. And he said that coven, they didn't have anything to do with that coven at all, nothing. And they were not like higher up. They weren't even in the same organization or anything, but they didn't talk about them. They didn't mess with them. And they just did not have anything to do with them. And he says, as far as I know, they were like another sect of black magic practitioners and shapeshifters, which he heard was ruled by a reptilian, a big, strong reptilian. And apparently his people just didn't have anything to do with each other. They had problems at one point and they kind of just left it at that, a truce. And that was just kind of left an open wound. And they were never talking. They never talked about it ever. In almost 20 years that he was doing this, it was black magic all the way. It was just really, really bad stuff, you know? And when they would fight with other covens and other, what he called circles, that they would be full tilt. I mean, they would be like, it was like gangster stuff, you know? I mean, sometimes they would just shoot each other or something and leave somebody there, you know, like just like, you know, whatever. But it didn't happen that often. They tried to keep things under wrap and they picked victims and things like that based on like their power. Like if they were weak, if they were spiritually weak, you know, then, but you, the prize was innocence. They wanted innocence. You know, if they could get in it, it was really disgusting the way that these people operated. And Gerald didn't glorify it and neither did Joel. They did not, and they were not, they did not want to become this. It was not a choice for them. They were forced to do this or die. And that was Gerald told him he wasn't going to kill him. And so they turned him and they did, but they really wanted Gerald because he's 6'5" and like, you know, 350 pounds and he's a huge muscular dude. And so they attached a little more wild one of these, the others, to him and made him into a really powerful weapon. But he said that Gerald was not a braggart at all, and I had to get it out of Joel. And Joel told me about, you know, his werewolf, the abilities he had that Gerald had. He said, dude, Gerald didn't even really realize how powerful he was, and I wasn't going to tell him because Gerald was unstable. And so he said, you know, I knew Gerald for years before we ended up doing this, and I knew how tough he was. He would walk into a bar and clear it out, beating people up, you know. And he said that the higher-ups, you know, the very powerful warlocks and the ancient ones, as they called them, he said it was kind of a misnomer, though, because the people themselves weren't ancient. It was just the demons. And that's what we call them, demons. That's what they are. Let's just say what they are. They call them the others, but they're really just demons. And so he said, you know, these demons, they would control everything. And the people, there was an illusion that you had control, but the people really were subject to the demons. And he said that some of the ancient ones were that Gerald had challenged them. And just the fact that he was willing to challenge one of them, he should have been taken out. But this very powerful warlock like smacked him. And I think I talked about that on the Werewolf Confessions. I'm pretty sure I talked about that. But he got hit with this like energy and it knocked his other out, and they had to go and like get it back in and get it on him. And he got in trouble for that because he challenged one of them. And Gerald was still learning, you know, and that was only like 2 years in or something. And that's nothing to these people. Drinking of the blood. Now, that's what I'm going to tell you about right now. One of the things they would do when they would drink the blood, it was ritualistic for the werewolves. They didn't need it, but it gave them energy, power. But for a vampire, it was life. And he said that the more innocent the blood, the better. And he said that there were some people that would come to the temple that were willing. They were like family members that they were willing to give their blood, and they would get paid for it. And they were told, you know, you don't talk about this. He goes, and of course, inevitably, they would say something, and then that would be it for him. But he said that. Go ahead.
The want for the innocent blood is because it's not heavy, laden with sin. Because yeah. I think the sin is stored in the DNA.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Because if they had drank blood, what he called tainted blood, was people who did drugs, who drank, you know, all this other stuff, smoked cigarettes. They would still do it. They would use it. They would take it because it would get you through, but it wouldn't give you as much power and energy as an innocent. Unfortunately, the younger, the better. Okay. So it was like not, it was horrible. It was, I don't even want to get into all that. It's just, and so there were a lot of people who weren't willing, let's put it that way. And they worked with other organizations, and even they even infiltrated this particular group of them. They had infiltrated city councils, and they were located all over the country. I mean, and all over the world. I mean, they had like an office in Italy and Rome, you know, and in Venice, and they had them in France, you know, like in Paris, and all these different places, and in Eastern Europe, and all across the world. They were even connected to like Asia. I think he said as far flung as like Japan and Taiwan. I mean, they had places that, and then they could go in and out of these portals, but you couldn't do it in a physical form. But one thing that he could do that Gerald could not do, and Gerald didn't even give me how to do this. It was Joel. Joel said one of the things, he goes, I heard your interview, or I heard you, you know, what you said about Gerald. He goes, you were spot on. You retold it pretty good, what he told you. And he said, you know, he goes, when you talked about the portals, he goes, I wanted to say of the portals, he goes, now that's something that Gerald, he goes, wouldn't have really known. He's like, they weren't able to travel, you know, because he wasn't as high up. Joel got really into it. And Joel knew that he had seen how disposable people were. So his thought was like, if I don't perform, you know, I'm not Gerald. Gerald's got this big, huge, massive body. He's a perfect weapon. He's like, I'm just a skinny country boy, you know, from Mississippi. Like, what in the hell am I going to do? He's like, so I had to like, but he goes, I'm smart. He goes, I'm not bragging, Mr. Turner. He goes, I'm very smart, intelligent. And so I use my intelligence, my wits, I guess you would say his cunning. And so he endeared himself to these people by willing to do anything. And he said he wanted to move up. And so he studied, and they gave him this thing called the Black Book. The book is very important because it's like a manual that you read. And he said it was weird, dude. This part's really freaking weird right here. He said that the Black Book was never ending. Like, you could get to the end and it just keeps going, but it never changes. The size of the book never changes physically. And I was like, what? And he was like, dude, he goes, yes. And so I said, that sounds like Harry Potter or something, you know? And he goes, yeah, but it's not no joke. He's like, these grimoires that they give you, they're all stored in the Black Book. And he said that the information, you never have to go and get a new information. He said it was like a Black Book that was like very metaphysical. Like, it was there, you know, but it was like the information, whatever you needed, you could just think it and it would show up to give you the answer. And he said when he first got it, it was very much a physical thing. He read it from cover to cover. And so then he had a couple questions and they said, go to the Black Book. And he's like, I did. And they're like, no, there's not just 400 pages of that book. No, there's more to it. Go back and read it.
Like, it's alive?
He didn't say anything like that, but he said, yeah, it's basically a book that, you know, you go back and read and you can keep finding more information. Another thing that he was able to do through the drinking of blood, which I thought was very interesting, was that he could learn other languages. And the other, whatever the other knows, you know. Like, if it knows multiple languages, you're going to know it. They attached a very old one to him. And so this one knew like old, like ancient languages, you know, because it had practiced and studied, because these demons have to do that too. They have to learn this stuff. They're not born with the knowledge. They have to learn it. And so he said that over the course of thousands of years or whatever, because these demons are not all the same age either. Like, that's a misconception too, according to what he said. Now, if you don't believe me, don't believe me. I don't care. If you don't want to listen, don't listen. But this is what this guy told me, and I'm giving you the information. So people are going to call me names and say all kinds of crazy stuff that we're making it up, or they were making it up, or whatever. And that's your choice. You can believe or not believe. I'm not forcing it on anybody. But what he said was, this is not like, you know, like you would think it is. He's like, the metaphysical becomes your life. It becomes, the spiritual world is real. And like Gerald told me, when the other is attached to you, you can see the attachments on other people. You can spot another person like you a mile away.
Yeah, it's like the line between this world and the next almost disappears.
Mm-hmm. You said that there is no turning it off either. It's like a nightmare. You walk around seeing demons, like, all the time. And he said some of them look horrible. And you could see some of them, like, feasting on people. You could just see them destroying them, you know. And he said that it was nasty. And he said, but your other also works kind of as a guard dog. And me and you talked about this, Anthony. It works kind of as like an alarm system. Like, if other demons try to come into your house and mess around and do stuff, he said that other will tear them up. And the other has a whole army of others that will come and defend you, you know. So he said you had that kind of power. Like, no other demon was going to be able to mess with you. And if you come across a demon that was more powerful than yours, the other would just call the hive and they would come and defend you. And he said that there were, and I asked him this question because I was very interested in this. And I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I'll bring it all together. You know how I always do. But he said that there were reptilians, because I asked him, I said, what do you know about the reptilians? And he said, oh yeah, they're reptilians. They're everywhere. And he said that some people know that they're reptilian. Some people have the DNA. They don't know it. And he said that he had different theories about what it is and what it was, but he never did really care that much to find a lot about it.
That guy we saw at the restaurant.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Like that. I'm not even going to get into that right now. Yes. But so he said that there was reptilians that would actually become vampires. And he told me, as far as what he understood, there was a race of reptilians that lived within the earth that were purely vampiric. And that they were constantly at war with another race of reptilians that were much, much older. And they were not vampiric, and they were not, but they weren't benevolent either. And he said that a lot of this stuff was turf war type stuff, and it was black on black, like I always say, dark on dark. There is no like, oh, well, these guys are saving humanity. They're good. He goes, no, they're just trying to destroy the others so they can take whatever it is from humanity. And he said, as far as he knows, there is no good guys. You know, there's only shades of black and blacker. But he said that there is, you know, God. And he said, in God, you know, in the organization, it's like they call it the organization, which is really weird. And so the God, the organization, the organized, as they said, they're organized in a way. And that was the big problem for them, was that there was a hierarchy for God, Christ, everything, you know, the Holy Spirit. They did not have that. And that was their Achilles heel. That was the weakness they had. They were able to prey on the unanointed, as they called them, very easily, very readily. There was really not much protection for them. He's like, if you were a non-believer, you were just done. And he goes, and then there were a lot of believers that weren't protected either, because, and they might've even thought they were, you know. He said he remembered one time a guy was like bragging to him, like, you can't hurt me, because he knew what he was. And it's like, I'm anointed. I'm in Christ. And he was like, no, you're not. And if you are, you're very weak in it. And he said, and there was this like black cloud around him. So he knew that there was some kind of demon on the guy. So he easily unattached that demon and then did what he did to him. You know, it was like, wasn't, you know, wasn't hard. You know, and he said that these people, their piety gets, you know, they gets the better of them, and they're full of pride and think that they have this ability because they pray to God, but it doesn't do any good because they're consonant center. They don't stop. And so he said that was a big problem for the Christians that thought that they were. Now, he did say this: you as a vampire could not go into particular churches. He said some of them, the churches were so weak, you could walk in there and do whatever you wanted. But most of them, you couldn't even enter the door because there were true powerful believers in there that were believers in God, in Christ. But he said that we stayed out of those places. But he said, I would go occasionally into this one church where it was just full of hypocrites and liars and frauds and whatever. And he said there was a guy that preached there who actually was a werewolf. Like, he was one of them, you know. And he said that he thought it was hilarious that these people were following this dude. This dude was like, yeah, you know, I'm in the Word of God and preaching and yo. And they're like, he's waving the Bible around. And I said, but how is that he's able to do all that? And he said, because... He goes, most of his flock were weak. You could see the energy around them. You could see how dark it was. And he had that ability more than Gerald did. Gerald was more of a foot soldier compared to this guy. This guy moved up quickly because he learned a bunch of different languages. He had the ability to read people's minds. He learned a lot of stuff, and he was interested in taking what they called the steps. And the steps basically are the steps that get you closer and closer to the darkness. The ultimate goal is to be able to swim in the abyss. That's what he called it. And I'm like, what? We'll get into that in a minute. But he said that this one guy that was preaching, he called him Georgie, and he said this guy had a flock. And he goes, and most of the flock was, they weren't anything at all. They weren't a bunch of creatures or whatever. He said, but they were very much a bunch of awful hypocrites, and they gossiped all the time, and they turned on each other real quick. And he said this guy, Georgie, was able to manipulate them almost like his own little army. And he said that there was another preacher that was very powerful that lived in a bigger city, and he said not far away from where they were. And he said this guy, he was a powerful, powerful warlock, and he could shapeshift, you know, at will. And he said that this guy was leading a flock, a large church. He was a preacher. And he goes, and I said, he's still there. And he goes, as far as I know, he's still there. And he's got to be, he said, he's got to be at least 120 years old. And yeah, it's a very weird thing. People don't know the guy's age because the guy changes his face and says, I'm a new preacher, whatever, every 20, 30 years, you know, and they change him out. And, you know, and there's people that'll give them their IDs and whatever. I mean, they had it made, you know.
So this other makes you age a lot slower then?
It's not the other. It's the blood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the blood. The other doesn't affect your age. He said, and he's even met teenagers that were more powerful than stronger people because they got attached by an other. But he said that there was one guy that was there who was only like a 19-year-old kid, basically. And he had an ancient other that had attached itself to him because this guy was basically this is my terms, called an NPC. He was born just, there is no redemption for this guy. He was born to be evil, and that was it. And so the other just found him and took him, you know, and he ended up with an elder. So he had a higher rank because he was almost like perfectly possessed. Now, that's another thing you and I discussed, Anthony, about this interview. Perfectly possessed children. These people that have these children. Now, he said it most of the time it didn't work, but sometimes they were able to conjure up like basically an empty vessel. They would through this union. They called it the birthing. It's like a rite where they have this sex magic. And like I said, if this is making you uncomfortable, turn it off now, because this is not, you know, PG. This is, I'm telling you right now. They have sex magic that they use during intercourse, and they will do these horrible rituals, and it involves like carving runes and stuff on the woman and doing all these like different, well, I say runes, I mean, they're like magic sigils. Sigils. And the woman will become like, she'll fertile, and she'll have a child that's basically just looks like a human,
like Rosemary's Baby,
but it's born to be like a serial killer. Basically, this child has no soul. It's like a child that has an other attached. He said no. He said that is a demon. It's a pure demon in a child's body. He goes, and these demons just learn to mimic, you know, humanity. And this child,
the flesh is a baby, but the spirit is, so it's not even a
human.
Yeah.
Well, it's just an empty vessel at that point.
Mm-hmm. And he said that that is very uncommon. That is not a normal thing. He says he only knew, in his whole time he was out doing this, he'd only met like maybe 10 that were like that, because it normally didn't work. But he said that usually what you get is a child with a human soul, and that child is just tormented by demons for its life. These people were doing horrible things. I mean, you would not believe the things they were telling me. Ritualistic cannibalism and actual cannibalism, which was another thing that they practiced. The vampires in particular were ravenous, always looking for blood. The werewolves just kind of like, you know, they all could eat normal human food. That was not a problem. Your spouse was always in danger because if you were stupid enough, as he said, stupid enough to get married and have kids and have a family, he said they became a liability, which was for Gerald. They threatened him with his family all the time. And, you know, they told him, you better be able to keep a secret, because if not, your family's gone. And so that was the thing. He stayed going on and off with Gerald's aunt. And eventually she got involved because she found the black book. And he said that normally the black book would not be noticed by a human unless it calls out to them. And it has to be someone that's susceptible. So he said that she began to read it. He comes home and she'd read half of it. He's like, I was gone for like 12, 13 hours. I come back and she's read half the book. He goes, which is unnatural. So he knew that it was speeding through, you know, was giving her this information. You know, he was like, she was just like 200 pages of like really hard to read, whatever. And it was just flowing. And so he took her to the temple, which their temple was called Shea. There was another one called Gerah. They had these weird names. The Gerah temple was the bigger temple, and Shea answered to that temple, and it was called the Order. And so what they did was they would go to the temple. And he said at the temple, they found they would do ritualistic, all kinds of stuff. The use of MDMA and LSD was prolific. Like, they constantly used it to do their rituals. So it was like putting you in a state of mind that you could be more open. Now, I asked him about that, and I said, do those drugs make you more susceptible to demon possession? He said, not necessarily. He's like, but it loosens you up. You know, and you can't give anything addictive to the other. That's the thing. That's why they didn't use cocaine, heroin, things like that, PCP, whatever, and meth. All those things were poisonous. You know, it would just, he goes, that's for the sheep, as he called them, you know, the people. And he said, he goes, we don't use those. He goes, we do things that are non-addictive, but that will open you up to do whatever. He said, but going hand in hand, magic and the use of psilocybin and LSD and MDMA, and sometimes all of them together. Because your blood pressure could be 300 over, you know, 200. It wouldn't matter because you're not going to die. You know what I mean? He goes, you only die if the other unattaches itself to you in the middle of this. Then your body's like, whoop, you're gone. Because you're in this heightened state of emotion and stuff, and all this stuff could happen. And he did see that. People like that were set up to be killed too. They would just drop over, fall over dead. Because their heart's beating at, you know, 200 beats a minute. And they're like, their pulses, you know, whatever. You know, and he's like, dude, it was a real thing. One of the things he said, though, like getting back to what we had talked about earlier, about how it was almost like, maybe I didn't talk about this, how their order was like organized. They were always at war with somebody, you know, always. But it was for so that they could get more power, more control. But he said that it was more subtle. You know, it wasn't like out in the open or whatever. It was done through magic. And typically, when someone would pass, it would be like you yourself, part of the order, you would know how it happened. You would know that that's how it went down. But other people, you know, would not know. They would not have, they would just think, oh, this guy got go into his car, he had a heart attack. Favorite method of getting rid of someone was just for them to have a cardiac arrest. So I told him about something that he may or may not have been aware of when I told him at the time. So I thought I should tell him. And I said, have you ever heard of the black dog? And he says, yeah. And I told him, I said, well, what is that? Because I know the carejo, it actually does that. It attacks somebody. And he finished my sentence. He was like, yeah. And it rips them apart. And then the people see it and it's a cardiac arrest. He said, yeah, that is basically a warlock. So what that is a warlock, when you enter in an agreement with it, and you don't fulfill your duty or whatever, it'll come for you. But he did say that there were black magic practitioners all over the world that weren't connected to any kind of order, and they were able to summon things like the black dog. He also talked about this black mist or smoke that people would see, you know, and it was a way for them to go into their house. So what he said, this is really interesting. He goes, you could walk up to someone's house. You would stand outside their house. And you couldn't get in, so you didn't have to break in. You would just turn into like a smoke or a mist and go under the door. But he himself did not do it. What it was is his consciousness flowed out of his body with the other. The other would go underneath the door or through a crack in the window. And he goes, it was a really weird thing. He's like, meanwhile, your body is outside and it's just standing there in a trance. And I said, well, what happens if somebody comes up and sees you? He goes, they won't. He's like, they won't see you. He goes, because most people don't pay attention enough, you know? And he goes, and when you have that ward is what he called it, like a magic, it's like a shield. People won't even notice you, you know? So he's like, you know, most of the time you wouldn't even notice you know, you'd be standing there doing this. And he said he did this multiple times.
So he could do this to enter people's homes without an invitation?
Yep. Unless you were, you know, somebody who was in Christ or anointed. And he said that if that person was very powerful in Christ, you couldn't do it. Because, but even a Christian, he goes, you can enter their home, but it doesn't mean you can hurt them. He said, but you know, you could do things to them because a lot of people, he goes, they don't know to plead the blood of Jesus over their stuff, over their house, their own family, their pets. He's like, people don't do that. They just live, you know, vicariously, like through, you know, la, 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 you know, whatever. you know, not vicariously, what do you say? Like haphazardly. They just live like whatever sloppies he called it. You know, they're just sloppy people. They themselves may be protected, but they're not thinking. They're not sharp thinking, you know? And these people, you got to realize they're very clever. And when they get an other attached to them, you know, you're talking about somebody that all of a sudden has an IQ of like, you know, 500. You can't match wits with them. That's over. You know, he says once the other left, he goes, I felt dumb. I felt stupid. All the knowledge I had, I couldn't even retain it all. He says, I remember 4 languages now. He goes, I had probably 24. You know, he could easily talk to anybody, you know. And he said that sometimes people would see the black in your eyes and they would freak out. And he goes, oh, my gosh, they would notice it. He said, because they had to do this thing at the temple. We talked about that on the other episode. That they went, when he would go to Shea, he would have to go and put his hands in the dark water and the black water. And he said that you would bathe in that, like kind of throw it on your body, which is like reaffirming yourself to the dark, you know, the dark lords, you know, whatever. Which he said was abysmal water. Like it comes from the abyss. It's like what you float in, you know, it's like weird. And he talked about this other water. There was like this crystal clear blue water that was actually toxic to them and the other, but you did it because you would get like parasites, because he said that there's these like mini demons. It's really weird that they would attach to you. And he said that they were like their own little community, whatever, it's like a bacteria that you would only get if you had that other. And they were just like what they called passengers. They would actually like little parasites that would feed on the other's energy. Kind of like these fish that feed on a shark, they attach to a shark. That's what they are. And he goes, and they'll drain the other's energy if they get too many of them. Like, you know, like if you had, you know.
Well, fleas. As in the spirit, as in the flesh. I mean, in the material world, we have parasites too. So.
Yeah. But you couldn't see these. So you had to like go and cleanse. You had to go into this blue water and you had to strip down and walk into it. And then it was like an acid to them. And it would like, he didn't know what it was. And it came from this weird spring within the earth. And it was known to be, like he said, if an average human drank it, it would be very healthy. But for them, it was poison. So it was like a purification. And he said, and sometimes it burned your skin and you'd have burns, you know. And if you weren't what you were, it would cause you damage, you know. But he said, like a human, though, a normal human would be good for you. But for them, it was bad because they were so corrupted. But he said that you would, you know, get these scars or whatever, and then they would vanish because, you know, your other would heal you along with the blood. You know, you could heal. But it was always a trade-off. Anything this other did for you, it always wanted something in return. If you did anything for you at all, you know, helpful, you had to be giving it something. And he goes, and I was very busy, always trying to supplicate. This always giving it something, you know. And he said that one of the things he realized too, It wasn't a freedom of having power over other people. It was slavery. And you were just a slave to these things. And you were a slave to the higher ups. And ultimately, the highest of the highs at these orders were basically still subject to the demons. And so he realized real quick that it was just a, you know, it's not a fun thing. It's not a good thing. People enjoyed the power that they had.
Yeah, but it's a sucker's deal.
It's a sucker's deal. And he said he hated it, every minute of it. Once he said after about the 10-year mark, he realized, he goes, this is my life. Is it ever going to get any better? Am I going to be stuck like this? And what's going to happen to me when I die? And he knew that what was going to happen. He knew, you know, damn well. But he said that, yeah, they were definitely, it was, you know, stuff like, you know, it was bad. And he said that he had seen some of these people pass away, and he said they die in agony, and they're looking at hell. He knows that they are. They had to be, you know. And so he watched people be taken to hell. Like literally, you could see their soul being dragged down, you know. And so it was just a nightmare. And he said that there were people who did small infractions, but somebody in the higher up had a jealousy for them or something, you know. And the friends you thought you had, they weren't friends. They would turn on you in a heartbeat because they wanted a little clout or they wanted whatever they wanted to get, you know, they would do. So they would just turn on you. I mean, there was no loyalty at all. He said, you know, guys, you would know for like a decade, they would stab you in the back for a little extra power. And so this hive mind became like a slave, you know, it's like a slavery. And he said that one of the worst parts too was that you never were at peace. He goes, even if you slept 100 years, you wouldn't feel rested. You were always tormented. It was no peace. It was constant stress. And I said, oh, kind of like doing what I do, podcasting. It's like these people, like very constant warfare with these people that never stop. But not all jokes aside, no, it was much worse than that. But he said that, you know, he's like, there was like, you live your life, like there's the human life you live, and then you go and you go out into the world and you be a human and pretend whatever, but it was like a play thing. It was a play, you're playing, and that the human life didn't matter, you know? And then it was like, this was your whole life was dedicated to the temple. And he said that, you know, he's like, it's like being in the worst cult you could possibly imagine. And he goes, and most of the people refrained from having children because if they did, they knew if they did, they would just end up being used. But then some of the people were so into it that they would have children so they could indoctrinate them into this. And it was crazy. He says, when you hear about these satanic cults and these people live in them, he goes, it's real. Yeah, it's really real. They didn't call it Satan because Satanists are like he said, they're people who worship themselves and do what thou wilt, the Anton LaVey thing. He's like, that was child's play. And he said, and people always talk about the Masons or whatever. He goes, the Freemasons, he goes, even the 33rd Freemasons are like, he's like, it's nothing compared to what we were doing. He goes, I laugh and people would talk about, oh, the Masons or whatever. He's like, even the higher up Masons that were doing bad, because and they, there was some of them, yeah, he knew. But he said even that was like very rare that they would be anywhere near as powerful as one of the higher ups in there.
Well, yeah, because we know about the Masons as an organization, but it's always the people that you don't know about that are like the real power, exactly. You know, powerhouse.
And of course, Anthony, you know some of this because we talked or whatever, but the buildings, mm-hmm. You know, tell them about the buildings.
These buildings that they would use as their quote unquote temples, they were often like these office buildings, but with no markings outside of them. And it didn't really, I mean, like, I get that thinking it's just an innocuous building and you want it to be inconspicuous so nobody suspected it of being what it was. But it seemed kind of counterintuitive to me that you wouldn't put at least some sign out there, advertise it as a business that is legitimate, but that the average person wouldn't walk up to and just wander in like J&A consulting firm or, you know, some kind of boring, innocuous something or other, but that these are the buildings that they would use for their temples.
And it was very odd. You know, some of the things he was telling me, you would think it's not the way you would think it is, you know, like you would. And I told him, I said, you know, me and Anthony were driving, and we saw one of these buildings, and I said, do you see that? That building had no markings on it at all. And he said, see, you're different. He said that to me. He goes, because I told him, there's two or three here in Austin. And one day I was driving with Nelly, and I saw a building, and there was nothing on there. I don't know if you remember that, honey. Remember I pointed it out to you, and I said, there's nothing on that building.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah, it was nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm not going to say where it was at, because I don't want them thinking I know, whatever. I don't, you know. Who knows? But I didn't say nothing.
The address will be in the comments.
But me and Nelly saw it, and he said, see, he goes, you're different though than most people. He goes, most people, they will see that and not even notice it. They won't even give it a second thought. They're not going to be like, you know, oh, look at this building. It's he goes, the average person. And he did, I asked him about this too. And I said, you know, I have this theory based on, the Kali Yuga, like where we're at. And he said, yeah, I agree with you. He automatically, before I even finished, he goes, I know what you're going to say, that morality has been reduced. He goes, that's absolutely true. And we feed on that. Or he said, we fed on, he didn't say we feed. He said, I fed on that. And so did my colleagues, basically, or his companions, I guess. But I told him, I said, do you looking back on it now, you're a free man. I mean, you know, you're not attached to this thing anymore. And I said, Gerald told me that he feels every bit of like 80 years old now, even though he's only in his 50s. He said, oh, I feel horrible. He said, everything, because my body was taking abuse and it was being masked, you know, by this, you know, this other. And he said, once I was unattached to it, you know, I felt terrible. You know, one time I got unattached to it and I was like, it was gone for like 2 or 3 days. I thought I was going to die the first time it happened. He said, then I was told how to deal with that, to go to the temple and they could summon it back. And if they really cared about you enough, which was rare, they could get another other to come. But he said that was very, very oftentimes not the case. It was a negative thing. And if it was something that you did to cause the other to leave, then you could be in big, big trouble. Another thing he said, the others would leave your body at night. And sometimes, like I said, they would work as a sentinel around your home and protect you from other things. But he said that if they sent a powerful enough demon to come after you, then there's nothing that you could do. I mean, even if the other really liked you. And that was the case sometimes.
Well, like at night as in like whenever you're asleep or just at night
sleep.
In general?
Yeah, he said asleep. But nighttime in particular, though. But he said that if you're asleep, you know, and he said that, you know, believe it or not, he said a lot of vampires do sleep during the day because they have more power at night because they can be inconspicuous and commit their heinous acts. And so he said that they're not always out during the day. You know, they come out at night. And he said that there were different levels. And the longer you were involved in this, the more you could shapeshift. And he said, get this, there is a type of vampire that can fly. And that they don't just float up in the air like some kind of movie, but they can shapeshift into a winged demon-looking thing. And it is the mimic of a type of creature that comes from within the earth, you know, which I was right about that. And he said that this thing is an actual species of ancient vampire. There's like this real actual species that comes from within the earth, and they live in various places. And he goes, those demons, he goes, I didn't know a lot about them. He goes, I only encountered them two times when I saw them at the temple. And I saw them and I thought, oh, these are people who are in their shape-shifted form. And they were like, nope. It's not what they are. And the reason that they're like 8 foot tall is because they're a different species of demon that is basically what we would call the Nephilim. They were still alive and they lived within the earth. And they lived in these like hives. And he said that if you encountered them, you're as good as dead because they're an ancient race of being. And he said that they consulted them, like told them, you know, like, he like gave them like how to use their ability. He goes, I was not one of those that could do that. He goes, but I could take the form of a black dog or a black wolf. And he goes, I very much could take the form of different things. He's like, Gerald, it was just a werewolf, period. That was it. There was no magic, you know, that he was doing other than that. It was just, you become a wolf. He's like me. He goes, I could look like something, you know, and people would look at it and it was an illusion, you know. He also said that there was this like constant, like something was always trolling you. He goes, you go outside in your yard and there's an owl there watching you and you know that it's a witch. And then he's like, you know that it's, as he called them, the BIT, where he said one of the bee, you know, the snitch bees, he said, they're watching me all the time. He goes, sometimes I would throw rocks at them. And there was this one that he called her Nancy. And he said, she was terrible. And so he went to the temple. And he goes, she was there. And she was like, oh, so you're going to throw rocks now? And he goes, oh, okay. So you were in my backyard last night. And she's like, I didn't say that because they were not allowed to admit to it. But they could make comments like, you know, snide comments. And so he goes, okay, well, keep coming back and see what happens. And so he goes, I had a swimming pool in my backyard. And he goes, and one day he goes, I was in my backyard and there was this like, he goes, and I'm not joking. He goes, this is not a joke. He's like, but there was a black panther swimming in my pool. And he goes, and I wasn't afraid because I could see this red attachment to it, you know, which was like, if you saw that, he goes, it was like very powerful, typically angry, something that was very unstable. And he's like, he walked up to it and he started to talk to it. And he goes, it's so bizarre. The first time you actually talk to one of these beings, it's in that form. And I said, oh, you mean like a mind speak? And he goes, no. He's like, that happens too. He goes, but this panther was, you know, one of my companions and it, you know, talked to me. And it's just like, what do you want? And said my name and everything, you know? And I was like, well, what are you doing in my backyard? And then he said it came out and shook itself off and it said, well, I'm on guard duty tonight. So I'm basically just patrolling through the area and I thought I'd stop by and take a swim. Like literally, this thing was like a black panther. And he's like, dude, it was so bizarre. He's like, and it was in my first year. And when you're a rookie, basically, they really watch you and they threaten you. And he said, this panther walked up to me and he goes, it's like got its head right up to my crotch. Like basically, he goes, you know, I'm getting really hungry. And he's like, at that point, he goes, I just went inside. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, this thing is like talking to me and it's going to eat me. You know, he's like, I just got I was terrified. I was inside looking, and he goes, and then the next day there's this guy at the temple laughing, you know, and when he walked into the temple, they were sitting on the steps laughing at him, you know, like, huh, you know, because they terrorized him the night before. And he said, this is something that they did. It was like a regular occurrence, you know, and then eventually after about his eighth or ninth, 10th year, you know, those around the middle of his stay there, they kind of left him alone. And then he had sentry duty at times, and it was his job to go and terrorize people and do the same thing. They wake up and you're sitting there in their room, you know, and, you know, they're like, uh-oh, you know, they're in trouble or whatever. And they think they're in trouble, but then you're just there to keep them on notice, you know. He goes, and you're constantly being watched, and not just by the other, but by demon spirits that would float around in the house, and they would try to camouflage themselves. And he describes something that we've talked about a lot on the show, the Glimmer Man, or the Shimmering Phantom, as we named it on the one episode. He goes, those oftentimes are cloaked demons. Like, they are literally like the other can give you that ability to cloak. He said, what these people are seeing isn't Bigfoot. It's a mimic of some kind. He's like, but it's typically, that's what they are. And he said, the reptilians are experts at that. And when a reptilian, and who's got a lot of reptilian blood, and they become a werewolf or a vampire, they are extremely powerful and volatile werewolf or vampire. And he said that he always wondered if Gerald maybe had some, you know, bloodline or something going back to the Nephilim, because he's such a big guy. And he said that they look for that. They look for those that are of the Nephilim bloodline, which exists. It's a real thing, according to them. So what ends up happening, these people, they have this other that goes with them everywhere, follows them everywhere, does whatever, you know. And they have I don't know how to say it. Like, it's like a terrorist, you know. It's like, it keeps you in line, and it can cause you extreme pain if you, you know, expose it to something that it doesn't like the gospel, like for real, you know? And I asked him, I said, are there any other religions that are protected from it? And he says, not that I'm aware of. He goes, but there could be. He goes, I heard that it was different in every region. There's its own whatever. And he said, so I don't know about the Far East. He goes, I didn't go there very often. He goes, I only went to a couple different places. But he said that he didn't know if they were, you know, like the Buddhists had any kind of power or whatever. He didn't know if they did. He's like, I didn't study much in the East. He said, a lot of people do. And he goes, and now you got to remember this. A lot of these people they lie because they're evil. They'll lie to each other. They lie, whatever. And they like to play games and whatever, mess with you. So he told me that there were some places, supposedly Buddhists, you know, that were really powerful, that had transcended and could do all kinds of things. And that the orders did not mess with them. So I don't know what that is. But I've also heard that some Buddhist monks are actually followers of Christ. They just don't call themselves Christians. So that could be what that is. I don't know. I would hazard to guess that's probably the case. But he said that, you know, as far as any other religion, he didn't know of any that would stop what they could do. And he said, and it wasn't about the religion at all. It was the person's personal relationship with Christ. Other than that, there was nothing. There were people that would be like, God, 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 and that didn't matter, you know, because he's like, who is God? You know? And I say that on the show. I'm like, I'm always looking for the true God, I'm a follower of Christ. And, you know, I don't want to be following something that's not the true God, the true living God.
Yeah. I mean, Christ warns when he says, when he tells certain people who come to him, like, we now cast out demons in your name, this and that. And he says, depart from me, I never knew you.
Yeah. Cause they didn't find him.
Yeah.
They didn't. They were too busy reading the wrong things and doing the wrong things. You know, and this guy, he was very aware, hyper aware of what the real reality was. And he said that, he goes, do you know, Mr. Turner? He's like, we're living in a matrix. And I said, yeah, I do. He said, yeah. And it's all a big game and you can manipulate it. He's like, but the stakes are extremely high. And so he said that what these people do, they've figured out the cheat codes. He's like, because the true God of this world is not the Heavenly Father, the Father of Christ. He goes, it is a mock. It's a fake. This is a sham. According to they knew this. He said, I've seen the actual true world, and it's not where we're at. He's like, and you could go through these portals. You know, he's like, you would call them portals. We call them doorways, whatever. And he said that, you know, there were like these mercurial doors that looked like liquid, like quicksilver, and you'd walk through them. And he goes, and you could go to the real world, like the real reality, like what is God's creation? He's like, and everybody's stuck in this matrix, you know, but they don't realize that they're, this is a counterfeit. Like, this is what he was telling me. But he said that God sent Christ to pull us out of this counterfeit. And that's the truth. I mean, I knew that. And, but when he was telling me this, he was very like, this is just something you learn, you know, he's like, but us, he goes, as part of the other, he goes, we couldn't go beyond like the borders of that world. He's like, we were stuck in this sort of like nightmare where we're at. He said, and it's very disheartening once you realize that. And then he goes, and then once you get unattached to your other, you start to realize that, he goes, this is, you know, you have to be here. You're here for a reason. And you can't transcend to the other world until you finish doing what you got to do here, which your job is to spread the gospel and to teach as many people as you can so that they can be ready and get out of here. And so we were on the same page with that. There were a couple things that we didn't agree with, and we even argued at one point. And oddly enough, I thought he had hung up on me, but he didn't. He didn't hang up on me. We just lost the connection and we were arguing. And I said, I don't believe that. And he's like, well, it's the truth. And I said, well, I'm not going to tell my audience that because I'm already in enough, you know, problems with people that are running amok with whatever I say and do. And he told me, he says, dude, I'm not telling you what to say or do. I'm not telling you what to believe. I'm telling you what I believe and you don't want to hear it. And I told him, I said, I'm listening to what you're saying, but I'm not totally in agreement with it. And he says, well, let me ask you this, Mr. Turner. He's like, you, a podcaster who's done an enormous amount of research, and you're very well read, and you're one of the most intelligent people I've met. He goes, but he goes, you got to understand something. He goes, I know the real reality. He's like, and I know because I dwelled in that for so long. He's like, and I'm telling you this to be true. So it's given me food for thought, ladies and gentlemen. I am going to do some research and see if maybe he's correct and I'm wrong. And it wasn't something that was earth-shattering that made me go, oh, I better reevaluate my whole life. But there were some things that I thought were correct that may not be. And it would make some people very mad if I told them what he said, because they're going to go, that's not what it says, And they're going to go, oh, well, you know, that's not correct, you know, because these people think they know everything. And it's going to be like, oh, okay, so he agrees with Josh Turner. So that guy, we're not going to listen to him. But like I said, there were some other things that we didn't agree on, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I'm going to do some research and find out for sure. Another thing that we need to talk about is how these demons or whatever, there's a whole nother world beyond this world. And then there's another world and another world. Kind of reminds me of the pond earth theory, the way he says that this is what it is. And they called it jumping. They could jump from world to world, but there in these other worlds, to protect those other worlds from people like him and these and the orders, he said that they had sentinels too. And now some of them were good, some of them were negative, and then some of them were just neutral. And he said it depended on the world. He said there are some worlds that are completely consumed by darkness, and they exist like they're on the edge of the abyss. They might as well be just, you know, hell. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you don't fly in a spaceship to get there. He's like, although this is what he said, some of these beings do use spacecraft or aircraft, as he called them. When they get into our world, they will use it. They don't go interstellar in between planets, things like that. He said they'll use them. Usually they make bases within the earth and they make bases in the ocean. And they'll use this craft to maneuver around because they have to have human bodies. But those human bodies typically are inhabited by demons. And he said that they come from other dimensions, other worlds. He said that I went to a world and they just called it, like, it started with an N and it was like some kind of weird name. I don't even want to say the name because it's actually the name of a demon, but because that demon took over that world. He said, and you go there and everybody is walking around. Oh, it's real quiet and orderly. He said, imagine communism on steroids. Like, you can only imagine, like, no one speaks or says anything or does anything without permission. Only certain people are allowed to speak. Everyone looks down. no one does anything. It's completely, and it's just gray and dark. And the best you can hope for is just nighttime because it's just ugly. Then in a way you don't see how ugly it is. And he said it was terrible. He goes, and then that was one of the more tame worlds. He said that there were some worlds where it was just completely ravaged by demonic influence. And what they do is they just perpetually kill each other. There's like whole worlds like that, whole realms. And he said that one of the most shocking things he ever saw, and I think I said this on the show, he walked in and he watched these two like 10-foot tall beings standing there. And when they turned and looked, they were like wearing these black latex looking coat type things. And he said it kind of reminded him of Hellraiser because he believes that some of these people get these ideas for these like Geiger's drawings, you know.
Art definitely imitates life a lot more than the other way around.
Yeah, and he said that you would see these demons that looked like they were something from Aliens, kind of like that, you know? And they would come out of this abyss pool, you know? And he said that sometimes you would see these, like, werewolf-looking creatures, and you knew they weren't the same as you and Gerald, you know what I mean? And he said that you would see them, and you would go, what is this? And you never really, you didn't ask questions. He goes, I got higher up. He goes, and I became a lieutenant. They had ranks. He was like, dude, I saw these demons and I asked my higher up. I said, you know, it's above my pay grade, but I asked him. I said, what are these? And he said, these are demons from another reality. They're not the local boys. These are not the normal, the Nephilim demons of this realm. They're from another realm. And I said, wow, dude, that was crazy. He goes, yeah, it's not all like you think it is. He said, there are these people that believe that it's just Earth and that's it. You know, it's just planet Earth. You know, there ain't nothing else. There ain't nothing else going on. I'm just going to believe planet Earth. And he said, that is not the case. When you talk to this guy, he had a bit of an accent. Like, he kind of talked like this, but he talked so quick and fluid, it was hard to keep up. The guy, you know, I'd have to tell him sometimes, hey, man, slow down. I'm not, you know, this guy was really well-versed, and he was saying what he had to say, and he was trying to get me to keep up. And I was like, I'm trying to get all this down. And so he had to tell me a couple times. Even with my memory. And he said that these demons, they were like 9-10 foot tall and they were gross looking. They had like this weird looking black hair that was real sparse and they were pale, had this weird like mouths that were sideways, you know, instead of like sideways that were, I guess, you know, left to right, they were up and down, you know what I mean? And they had all these weird looking teeth, like a Venus flytrap is the way he described it. And he said that there were others that had these little piranha teeth, you know. And they were real hostile. You get close to them and they would snap out at you and they looked like they were amphibious. And he saw Sasquatch looking creatures, which Gerald said that he had never seen that. But he said Gerald wouldn't have known about that because Gerald did not go where he went. He said Gerald was, that was way above his pay grade. He said Gerald would have been like, you know, like a sergeant compared to me. He goes, I became a captain, you know, and you know, I just went up and up. And he said as each rank, as he got up, you know, higher and higher, he's like, he was able to know more and learn more. And the black book was very important. And I asked him, I said, Gerald didn't tell me anything about the black book. And he goes, that's because the dummy didn't read it. So I asked Gerald about that. I texted him. I said, did you not read the black book? And he said, hell no. He said, I was not really wanting to be a part of that. You know, like he was determined to not know as much. You know what I mean? Like he really did not want to be. But ultimately, what ended up happening, and we can, there's a whole bunch more to this. I could go on and on. But ultimately what ended up happening is that, you know, we know the story that what happened to Gerald. He was, you know, saved and he quit all this because of some righteous people that helped him, including his wife. And he said, dude, after about 2 months, he goes, they kept coming to me every day, you know, trying to get me to do something to Gerald. He goes, I couldn't. It's not for lack of trying. He goes, I did try. He's like, I didn't feel right about it, but I thought, you know what? If I don't do this, they're going to kill me. And he goes, and then he said, one day, he's like, Gerald just shows up at my house. And he goes, and there were two of the order there. And Gerald, he goes, he rings the doorbell. He goes, and here's the story, what happened. And this is how he got saved from it, you know? And Gerald, and this is most important. He said, you have a heightened sense of hearing. You don't, you know, you have, you know, whatever, you can see better, you know, whatever. And so I said, so spot somebody without glasses and they'll be, that's a werewolf or a vampire. You know, that way. He says, no, because some people will wear glasses just to deceive you, to make you think, you know, that way you can't fool you, you know. He's like, it's like one day somebody's wearing glasses, the next day they're not. Oh, look, they, you know, they could have just got LASIKs. But he goes, but it's not like that. He goes, you had to keep that facade of whatever you were. You had to keep pretending, you know. And that's crazy. He goes, it's like the opposite of what you would think. Some people pretend to be werewolves and vampires, and it's just bullcrap. He goes, we were pretending to be human, and you really weren't. And he said, so he had these two guys from the order there, and they were basically giving him veiled threats. And so Gerald rang the doorbell, and they said, well, answer it. And they went to go hide. Not like hide, but they went into the next room. And Gerald's like, you're coming with me. And he's like, I can't do that. He goes, no, you're coming with me. He goes, and he had three other people there, and they were holding Bibles. And I told him, I said, Gerald, I can't do that. You know what'll happen. He goes, what about your aunt? Think about her. He goes, she's made her choice. They called her Bridgie. He said, Bridgie's made her choice. And he said that it was nothing you could do. He's like, she was already a part of it, and she did not want to leave it, and she was a witch, a very powerful witch. She was moving up with his help. And he said, at that point, we weren't even together anymore. We were just kind of like friends, you know? And he goes, I was very much a part of this whole free sex thing. There was no, you know, you didn't have like a girlfriend or a wife or anything. Everybody was just, it was orgy, you know, all the time, whatever, you know? He's like, it was just, you know, disgusting lifestyle. And he said, I told him, I said, I'm not going to do that. He goes, and Gerald's a very large man. And he goes, and he reached to grab me. And I thought, what are you doing? He goes, so I went to grab his arm and like, I was going to break his wrist. He goes, because I had this ability. He goes, and then I realized, I go to grab his arm and I had no strength. Because it was like, I was squeezing his arm and it wasn't doing anything. And Gerald literally grabbed me, put my arm behind my back and walked me out like he was arresting me. He goes, and I look back and two of the order were there and I was thinking, are they going to try to help me? He's like, and they did nothing. They just stood there like weaklings, like impotent, you know? And then he goes, I get in the van. He's like, and they literally kidnapped me. They throw me in a van and they take me to this church and they sit me down and it's like this hall where there's like tables and chairs, you know, like where people eat, like fellowship hall, you know? He goes, and I'm not going to, and he told me the church and the name and everything. I'm not going to disclose it. But he said that this preacher comes out and starts praying over him. And he said, they didn't have to cast anything out of me like they did Gerald. He said, it was already gone. When Gerald showed up, he's like, he had this white, yellowish glow about him like he'd never seen. And he's like, and these men that were with him were like, had like whitish blue. It was weird. Like you could see the different auras. And he goes, it was crazy. He goes, and then the next thing you know, they just looked like normal people again. He goes, and I didn't even realize that the other had left me. It wasn't even going to put up a fight. And he goes, and my other was very powerful. But these men were devout. They were absolutely devout. And so he said that they were like purified silver, you know, which is something that vampires and werewolves don't like. Vampires too. And he said that these people were praying over me. And I just immediately accepted Christ. I was just like, I'm free. I'm free. And he goes, and then it just hit me. He goes, and I started saying it out loud. I'm free. I'm free. And he was like, and he's in Jesus' name. And he just repeated the salvation prayer. He goes, and that was it. He's like, I stood up. He goes, and I felt like, you know, $1 million. He goes, but as the days went on, he goes, my body felt horrible. And he goes, and then he goes, I go outside of the church and I vomit up this black goo. That was like this byproduct, I guess, is what he called it, from having the other, you know? And he's like, it all came out of me. And he goes, and this black stuff that would be in my eyes, you know, I looked in the mirror and it was in my eyes and it was leaking out of my eyes. And he's like, I looked into the mirror and I spoke in Jesus' name and it just jumped off of me and went down the drain. And he said it was crazy. And then he realized like he was just swimming in this black abysmal goo. And he's like, it was a terrible, terrible thing. And he realized every sin he had committed. And he said, I go home and it's like a week of just, you know, fasting, trying to get my body back, and then praying to God and asking for forgiveness over and over again and just telling God how sorry I was, you know. And he goes, it just was over and over. I kept just apologizing. Like, I can't believe I did all these things. And he's like, dude, it was definitely a relief, you know. He goes, but I also all the emotions that I had long buried were gone. I became, you know, all of a sudden right there. I was like, I felt a righteousness about me that I had never felt in my whole life. And he said that I thought that, you know, at the time I thought, man, you know, I feel like I'm just going to fall over dead, because his body was so racked with pain and so tore up from all of the abuse, you know, that he had done. And, you know, he goes, doing all this changing and doing all this stuff, you know, he goes, it's not a costume. You know, he goes, you're not just putting on makeup, because you're changing into something else and your body pays the price. You know, it's unnatural. It's a very unnatural thing. And so to conclude the story, he basically just went into, you know, asking me if I had any questions at the end of this. And I said, I have a ton. And so I asked him a million questions and he answered them as best he could. And so what we're going to do, folks, I'm going to tell you this right now. Okay. If you guys want, I'm going to do a Q&A at the end of this show, if this is the end right now, and we will do a live stream. And if you want to go over to YouTube and jump on the live stream, I will answer questions, some of which may have already been answered during live stream number 218. I would encourage you to go back and listen after we do the live stream tonight, right now, as we leave this show, the end of this show, I will do a live stream. And I will answer questions that I was told by Gerald and Joel when this ends, okay? Because I thought it better to just tell this on the podcast, because that way people from the podcast will go, hey, let's go to the live stream.
This episode is going to create a lot of buzz, I think, and people are going to have a lot of questions and they're going to want more and more and more. This is one of those stories that comes along like just once in a blue moon.
Yeah.
You know,
there have been a few, you know, that have just really gripped us, you know, and people always say, well, you're a great storyteller. You know how to retell the story, whatever. But it's not a story. It's encounters that people are having. But this is a guy's life story of, like, what happened to him. He gave me a story about his upbringing, you know, and how he grew up hard. And he ended up, he's like, we were the perfect victims. We're just a couple of hillbillies that were selling drugs, you know, and we made a connection and all this other stuff. You know, I mean, he told me about Carlos, the drug dealer, and what happened to him. You know, and that's a question. If you want to answer, you want to answer to that, well, come on to the live stream and we'll answer that question. There's a lot of questions you may have that I did my best to try. Like I said, almost 5 hours of talking to this guy. I asked a lot of questions, and some I was still texting to both of them. They are Christians now. They do go to the same church, and they have not talked much about this because the temple is still there and it's still in effect. He said that through their diligence, basically, though, they've been able to rescue people from these orders because they have a power. He's like, we can walk into those temples and they can't do anything. He said, but it's like, you have to be razor sharp. There is no, you can't play around with anything, you know? He's like, unless you're really, really devout. And he goes, and there can't be any, you know, like dabbling in anything, you know, like you can't play with Ouija boards. You can't, you know, none of that. He goes, dude, anything magical at all will open the doorway. He said he had to get rid of a lot of stuff in his house. And there were a couple objects that he had the problems with, you know, after this. And we can talk about that too. But I encourage you to come and we'll do the live stream. Like I said, we've talked now for over an hour and 20 minutes. So if you're interested in coming and listening and doing the live stream and you know, participating, that's fine. If you want to ask questions. All right. So for you guys, Nelly, Tony, Anthony, do you have any questions for me to ask right now that I can just answer? And then.
So when he read that black book, like you said that he read it cover to cover and he thought that was it.
And he kept reading more and more. It was like he read it the whole way through. It was done.
And then he had questions and...
But he said that at the end, it just abruptly ends. There was no real ending. It was like 400 and I think 15 pages. That was it.
But I mean, like, how did he read it cover to cover if it doesn't end?
Because he would go back and open it up and whatever he opened it up to, whatever he was needing, uh-huh, would be right there to be read.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not just a magic book, not just a grimoire. It's like a... Like Nelly, I think you said it was like it's alive.
Yeah, it's like it's its own kind of... entity, not like a entity like a soul, but an entity of knowledge or a perpetual information, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So the contents of it would change depending on what you were looking mm-hmm. for or thinking of.
He said if you were a person, though, like a regular person, uh-huh. and you stumbled across it, it would just look like an old black book, and you would just read the 415 pages. That's it.
What if that's what some of these weird, like, manuscripts are that we can't make heads or tails of? Like, I mean, everyone knows the Voynich manuscript, but, like, there's some others that I don't know the name of.
Well, he described books that came from other dimensions that were here. And that's another question that the chat, they can ask, and maybe we can answer that on the live stream. I will say this. If you or someone you love or know is caught up in all this, you know, I would definitely, definitely don't just run up into one of these temples and try to, like, play Rambo, because these people play for keeps. We, since the Gerald interview, we've been contacted by several people who've said, hey, I know someone who practices werewolfism. I know another one that said her mother was a vampire, told Nelly.
Yes.
Yep. And so, and there was a guy who said he thought his dad was one. And another guy even that told me his aunt was a shapeshifter. And then someone who had contacted us, Anthony and me and Tony, who said that his uncle was a werewolf. And another guy even that said he saw his friend change. This is not a joke. And all these people who want to believe, oh, it's dog man, it's out there in the woods running around. Probably not. This could be what this is. And I'm telling you, this is the truth. You know, there's people out there that are doing these things. And I've suspected for a long time, but I finally, when I told Nathaniel's story on Sunday, which is kind of connected to this, about a Bigfoot that chased them, but, you know, Nathaniel had nothing to do with the order or anything like that, but he introduced me to these people. He said, you need to talk to these people, because this could be the answer to the dogman phenomena. Now, there are connections to these, what they call, like, assets. And we've talked about that on the show, too. And he had something to say about that. So if you want to know about that, go to the chat. He also said that there is a spiritual one and a physical one. There are different breeds and species of different types of these creatures that live within the earth. He had something to say about that. But anyway, he goes, all I can really say for sure is what I was and what I know, you know. And these interdimensionals, really weird. Like, there was some really weird stuff. Something that we would classify probably as some sort of space alien, but it's not really a space alien. That's not what it is. So for Paranormal Roundtable, everybody here listening, if you're on the podcast, sorry if you don't want to go to the live stream and take part in it, whatever. Sorry, man. I guess I don't know what to tell you.
Boo-hoo to you.
So if you're listening to me on Spotify, which a lot of people do, a lot of people listen to me on Apple and Spotify and all these different platforms, try to make it over to the live stream. If you can't, then I don't know, try to make it on another day and see what the people ask the questions. The live stream is very important. I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to hear it, I don't want to talk, oh, whatever, blah, blah, blah. There's all these excuses, whatever. But that's what we're going to do, because I can't answer your questions on a podcast. All right, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you and good night.